I've come to the Koenigsegg factory in Sweden for an exclusive look around.
I'm going to explore the inner workings of this secret facility with Christian von Koenigsegg. Together, we'll uncover how his company's unusual history led to its most powerful car, the 2,300 horsepower Jamera. I'll even get to see a brand new engine being tested, and I'll learn what's next for Koenigsegg. But first, let's meet the man who started it all.
I'm here with Christian von Koenigsegg, here at Koenigsegg in Ängelholm, Sweden. But I want to start off with how it all began, because back when you were 22, 1994, you found the company. I'm basically my final year at university. You're starting a hypercar company.
You what?
So I actually started my first company when I was 19, buying and selling plastic bags, ballpoint pens, frozen chicken, just trying to make some money so that I could build a car. 3 years later, when I was 22, I had made a little bit of money. So I started, and 2 years later, I had a driving prototype that still drives around today.
It makes it sound like a fairy tale beginning, but the truth was very different. Christian nearly lost everything when a fire ripped through the first Koenigsegg factory and just 2 weeks before the Geneva Motor Show. But despite this, his team managed to complete the first CC8S prototype in time for the event and relocate to a nearby Air Force hangar. This used to be home to Sweden's famous Ghost Squadron, which is where Koenigsegg gets its iconic motto from, "The show must go on." But despite the rocky start, Christian did manage to save a few mementos from those early days, which he keeps in his office, and that's where we're headed next.
This is the model I made back in 1994 when I started the company. The only reason why this exists is because it was lost in 1998 in the US, and then it came up on an eBay auction like 6-7 years ago, and then I bought it back for peanuts. But if it wouldn't have been lost and found, it wouldn't exist, because it would have been lost in the fire.
Yes.
So this is one of the few things I have from the early days.
But Christian's love of cars goes back much further than that, and it comes from a place I'd never have guessed.
So when I was about 6 years old, there was this stop motion movie from Norway called Pinchcliff Grand Prix about a bicycle repairman who built this car. So it's got a 12 liter engine in the front, it's got a rocket engine in the rear, 4-wheel drive, it runs on ethanol, and it races against Can-Ams and Porsches and Ferraris and wins the race. My father told me that when we went out of the theater, I told him that I want to be like that bicycle repairman when I grow up. I want to build a car like that.
And Christian's dream is coming true with the new Jamera, which is the most powerful car Koenigsegg has ever made. And I was about to be one of the first people outside the company to see an actual production version being built. But as we walked over to the factory floor, Christian had an admission to make.
I recently bought my first Koenigsegg a few years ago, because All the money I ever made, it was just put back in the company, because that was... My dream was not to drive my own car or have my own car, it was to build cars.
Yes.
But eventually I could also afford to buy one. I bought a used one first.
And that just shows like the commitment to the business. Everything is reinvested.
Exactly. So this is the Jesko production line. So here you have 10 stations. We push the car forward a station every third day. So a little bit more than one car output per week on this line here. Over there you have what we call PDT, where we have test driving of the produced cars.
So they're checking over the quality of them before they go to
checklist,
customers.
Yeah, and start them. And then we have wheel alignment here, and then it kind of cycles a few times, checklist, checks everything, tightens things, and then polish it up like it had never been driven, of course.
As we worked our way down the production line towards the Jamera, I realised something. Most Koenigsegg owners will never see all the stunning details that go into their cars, and I think Christian might be missing a trick here.
It's quite interesting actually looking at your cars, because when you look at the three big like hypercar makers, Bugatti, I think of Pagani, and I think of you guys, and you've all got like this slightly different approach. And I say Pagani is very much about like the design aesthetic.
Sure.
You see all the beauty and stuff.
Of course.
And you guys actually have like similar levels of beauty, you just hide a lot of it away.
Yeah, it's underneath the skin. I mean,
is that kind of Swedish? Is that a Swedish mentality?
I guess it's just we're equally focused on everything, not only that.
Uh-huh.
Maybe we're going to show it a little bit more in the future, because there's so much beauty hidden underneath.
So this is interesting here. We've got a much more finished car, and I like this color.
It's beautiful.
Wow.
Our finish, we take no hostages. If you're used to looking at paint, you push your eye along that surface.
There is no orange peel?
There is no orange peel. We drive our painters insane with our
requirements. I've just got a new Porsche. It's quite orange peely.
Look at, I mean, this is a negatively curved surface. This is almost impossible. Positive are easy to make. Then we have this very particular Koenigsegg finish we call K&C. So if you run your hand up and down on this, you actually feel the fibers. So this is not only not lacquered, It's also wet sanded away the thin epoxy layer that comes from the production process that everyone else would keep. So it's the purest form of carbon fiber we can imagine. We do entire cars unpainted like this in KNC.
And that obviously adds cost, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it's the level of perfection and craftsmanship is insane.
The last time I experienced anything like this attention to detail was when I visited Toyota's GR factory in Japan, where they build the GR Yaris. Koenigsegg is obviously on another level, but there's something quite Japanese about Christian's approach to building cars. And that wasn't the only thing, as I realised when he was showing me around a partially built Yesco.
And, I noticed you've got a Seiko watch on.
Yes, yes.
Do you like Japanese products?
I do, actually. Uh-huh. I like the precision engineering of Japanese. I like Japanese cars. I like Japanese technology. Yeah.
What's your favorite Japanese car?
I guess it's my MX-5 Miata, just because it was the first sports car I ever bought when I was 19. And I still have it after having sold and bought it 3 times over the years and always paid more to buy it back. Still very little money, of course. I've had it for some years now and it's just memory lane, no power at all.
Yeah, that 1.6 NA.
Yeah, first generation black car.
Do you still drive it now?
Every summer.
Miata is always the right answer. I've got an MB.
Right, okay.
Jack's got an NC.
Nice. Yeah, we have actually, Daniel, how many people have Miatas here? In the
20
employees have Miatas here, exactly. So it's a very popular car.
But the new Jimera is about as far removed from a Mazda MX-5 as you can get. After all, it has 4 seats, 4-wheel drive, a twin-turbo V8 engine, and a hybrid drive system that combined produces 2,300 horsepower.
Here we have the Jimera production line, where we are still mostly building test cars, but we have the first customer car on the line.
The first, the very first?
Yes.
Okay, so if you're lucky enough to be the very first customer of a Jimera, here is your car. Is this one?
Not this one.
Okay,
it's over at the start of the line.
Right. So how many test cars do you build?
Depends. The Jimera we did the biggest. I think it was like 15 test cars.
15 test cars, yes. 300 production cars.
Yes.
And what do you do? Like many manufacturers, they crush their test cars. Obviously, you're
not going to do that. No. We crash test them, and eventually some of them we crush when they're completely beaten up. But the test cars we try to keep for as long as possible as test cars, and then we can revamp them into new nice cars eventually, put them in a museum, and eventually sell them to a collector or something like that, depending on how many we have. Either this one or that one is the first customer chassis. So they're going on the line now. And we manufacture the chassis right over here. Oh, they're actually in the process of making one right now, so we can have a little look.
So all carbon fiber tub.
From axle to axle, it's 65,000 Newton meters per degree torsional rigidity. So it's the highest of any car I've ever heard. In the stiffer chassis you have, the softer suspension you can have with the same degree of control. The reason why it's so stiff is because we have this huge opening with no B-pillar that we needed to reinforce a lot for side crash, because there's no B-pillar to help you. So we need to make this opening so stiff, because it's the biggest opening on any production car in the world, as you can see over there. And that ended up also making the monocoque a little bit stiffer than even we thought we needed.
Like you said, it's the biggest opening on any car.
And any passenger car.
Production car, yeah. Passenger car.
Unless you have vans, sliding doors or anything like that.
Because you get in through one door.
Yeah, exactly. So you can sit in the car in the showroom. So you open the door, you can parallel park this far away from another car,
yeah.
And you can jump in two 2-meter persons, or four actually, but from one side, two 2-meter persons simultaneously without moving the seat with one door.
And this is a great example of Christian's unusual approach to designing cars. He's more like an inventor than a pure engineer. And he loves to get involved with every single area of developing a new car, including manufacturing parts that no other car maker would dream of, as I found out when he showed me some fully built Jimera prototypes.
Here we can see some of the test cars of the Jimera.
And this is your most powerful car, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you make a lot of the components yourself. So then what about where do you source the motor from? You don't make that yourself, do you?
The e-motor.
Do you?
Oh, we do, yeah.
What? Okay.
We don't
make the batteries?
We do.
Okay.
We don't make the cells.
Okay, yes.
The cells, we collaborate with manufacturers. Sometimes they can adapt them a bit to us, but usually we can find something suitable that we then create our packs and modules, and then we put our BMS, our cooling system, our safety systems. But the e-motor and inverter, we build absolutely from scratch.
So you wind the
we wind the coils. I'm happy to show you the production
yes.
line. It's 5 minutes away from here in another building. So we have a facility where we can produce 5,000 e-motors per year. Actually.
Uh-huh. Are you a bit of a control freak, Christian?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, so this is another test car.
So when you say test car, these are the ones that you're developing, so you go out and test different components
on
them?
Yeah, absolutely. We do endurance testing, we do winter testing.
So it'll all go back together again, you'll get it out there on the runway.
Try a new part, check something out, put some test part in, run it hard, take it out. So things like that.
What's the quickest recording one of your cars? How many kilometers an hour?
452 or 57.
Is it the fastest production car in the world?
As far as we are aware, meaning a car that a customer can buy and drive and that's capable of that speed. The other brand's record seems to be like a more of one-off pre-production stuff that,
right.
that you don't give in the hands of the owners.
It's but the Jesko Absolute, isn't it?
No, it was the Agera RS, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
It's still the Agera RS.
Yeah, 2017.
Yeah.
The Jesko Absolute we haven't proven the top speed of yet.
Right, it's theoretical then?
Yes.
Okay.
We are hoping to have a tire capable of doing this in the near future. So that's kind of the thing we're waiting for, to be able to prove how fast it can be.
And this is why Koenigsegg keeps hold of so many prototypes like this Jesko Absolute. They're all being used to test new developments, which could be rolled out to customers months or even years after their cars have been delivered. But before we take a look at some of the incredible engineering that goes into these cars, I wanted to ask Christian some important questions. So Christian, out of all the cars you created, which is your favorite? Not necessarily in terms of outright performance, the one that means the most to you.
I get that question quite a lot, and I always start thinking about that car is nice like this and that, but I think it's very simple. The first one is absolutely not the best one and not the most beautiful or anything, but it was the impossible becoming possible that made everything else possible. So therefore I enjoy it the most.
Which one do you actually own though?
A CCR.
A CCR.
And a CC850.
For me, CC850.
Yeah.
I just love the look of it because I love the look of the CC8.
Yeah, the original,
yeah.
The OG.
I love that. Attack or Absolute?
From a beauty perspective, Absolute, and practical as well, since you can have luggage and it's a little bit more softly sprung. Around a track, of course, an Attack, more downforce, stiffer. And if you like to go to the track on the weekends and on the road on normal days, Attack is maybe better. But this is amazing on the track as well. It's more driftable because you have less downforce, it's more softly sprung, so it's super fun on a track. You can look like a drift hero with it.
Obviously, the new Jimera hasn't been designed to hit 300 miles an hour like a Jesko Absolute, or smash lap records like a Jesko Attack. Instead, it's a technological flagship. It's basically Koenigsegg showing the world exactly what it's capable of. And one of the most unusual bits of tech developed for this car is the bizarre three-cylinder engine that Christian wanted to show me. So where are we now?
Now we're in Hangar 4, which is one of our two prototype hangars. And in this corner of the hangar, we have the free valve development department.
Almost every internal combustion engine ever made uses a camshaft to control when the intake and exhaust valves open and close. But Koenigsegg has developed a new kind of engine that can independently control each valve using pneumatic, hydraulic, and electromagnetic actuators. These can precisely control how much air enters the cylinder at any time, which means the valves themselves can replace the butterfly valves you get in traditional throttle bodies. And this means there's absolutely zero delay when you hit the accelerator. Free valve engines also have the potential to reduce emissions in a pretty unusual and quite violent way.
We can turn the engine into a flamethrower at cold start with the help of the valve timing to heat up the catalytic converter like this. And 90% of the emissions from a combustion engine comes the first 20 seconds before the catalytic converter is warm. So if we can warm that up in 7 seconds instead of 20, you sort of half your emissions on a driving cycle. So here is a test rig, so you have the actuators up here.
Yeah.
So it's a 2-liter three-cylinder with 600 horsepower.
And I can see the valves in there.
Normal valves.
So there's your inlet.
Yeah.
Or your exhaust, is that exhaust?
That's the inlet, and then you have the exhaust here.
Yeah.
So then you get rid of the chain drive or the belt drive, so the engine is a little bit shorter as well. It looks like a straight six because it has six pipes in the header manifold, and one pipe from each cylinder goes to one turbo, and the other pipe from each cylinder goes to another turbo. So up to 3,000 RPM, we only open one exhaust valve and force all the exhaust gases to one small turbo. So we get full spool up at 1,700 RPM. We have 600 Newton meters at 1,700 RPM from a 2-liter three-cylinder engine. That's free valve.
Yes. Wow. That's the same torque as a 3-litre twin-turbo straight six in a new BMW M2, but 1,000 RPM earlier in the rev range. So this engine sounds like a win-win situation, but there's a catch. Despite appearing in the original Jimera show car, Christian decided not to offer the free valve engine in the production version. Instead, it's getting a 5-litre V8. So what changed? Well, before we can answer that question, I wanted to learn a bit more about these incredible V8 engines. So your first car had a Ford engine, didn't it?
Actually, the first car had an Audi engine.
Oh, okay.
The absolute first one.
The CC?
The CC, and we hoped to buy engines from Audi, and they said yes first, and then they said no after we built the car. And then I found another engine in Italy, a flat 12-cylinder boxer engine that we built the whole car around and put in. But then I realized this modular platform from Ford, overhead camshafts, modern. It was just a good starting point, I felt. Then we did our own connecting rods, pistons, camshafts, put supercharging on it, dry sumped it. So like maybe it was 40-50% Ford parts and the rest very custom. And we got out 655 horsepower of the first homologated one, and then up to 800, but that was it for that. So for the CCX, we started casting our own blocks and then our own heads, and then we moved on from there. So,
and there's something special about, haven't you got the lightest crankshaft or something?
We can have a look at it here. Yeah, that's correct.
So this is flat plane?
This is flat plane for the Esco and Jamira. And then we have our pistons here.
Got to show you the piston, because this is like, this is attention to detail. No one's going to see this, right? Literally no one is seeing that, apart from the engineer.
And this Conrod is quite special in its design. It's very lightweight compared to its strength. And if you look here, I don't know if it's a bit tiny text to read.
Okay, so there's a little message on it. It's impossible to lead by following, therefore I am different. No one's seeing that, Christian? Apart from the engineer. So Koenigsegg is famous for doing things differently. How do you decide, yes, we'll do that one, no, that's harebrained, we're not going to do that one? And what things have you said no to?
I think it's a quite a fluid process. It's like one thing leads to another with the Jamira. Like halfway down the development cycle of it, one engineer put the Jesko V8 in, and it didn't fully fit, but I kind of walked past and said, hang on a second, how is that possible? That should not fit there. Oh, it kind of does, and it kind of doesn't. So with the, no, I can't unsee that. You know, what would that mean for the car? It's like, how is that even possible? And then we had developed the LST for the Jesko and started getting super fascinated of what a game changer that transmission was. And then, hang on a second, if we wrap this around and do this, we can make this most exciting car on planet Earth, and it happens to be a four-seater. We just cannot not do that, even though it means it will prolong the project a bit.
But Christian didn't make this decision alone. First, he had to speak to everyone who bought a build slot for the Jamira to make sure they'd be happy getting a 5-litre V8 instead of a 2-litre 3-cylinder engine. And you know what? Almost all of them said yes. I wonder why. But even though the engine was almost fully developed at this point, Christian realised the entire layout had to be completely redesigned, or else the whole V8 Jamira project would be dead on arrival.
Hey guys.
Hello.
So here we can see, this is a Jamira Hot V engine. So the difference between the Jamira and the Jesko is that to squeeze in the V8 in the Jamira, we needed to make it narrower. So we could not have the exhaust on the side here. So we flipped everything around, made new heads and changed a lot of things and put the exhaust up top, and then a different kind of flush intake on the side to squeeze it into the Jamira. So the new heads, new intake, new exhaust, new dry sump, new turbos, new intercoolers, new controller. But the actual combustion chamber process is very similar in timing. So fundamentally, combustion-wise, is very similar.
So this is hooked up to the dynamometer there, which is...
Yeah, this is an engine brake dynamometer. So we can brake up to 2,000 horsepower here.
And what you're running this one on at the moment? Is it E85?
Let's ask, I don't know. What fuel is inside now?
Currently, we're on 95.
95.
Just, okay. This is standard. So this is if you're filling up...
Just pump
fuel. Yeah. And are you about to run it up?
We're about to start.
Yeah, cool.
Timing is perfect.
They want to see a graph.
Can we get like a good old school dyno graph?
95 octane graph.
Yes, we can show something. It is cold, so we'd have to heat it up first.
So let's see how it behaves, an actual real cold start.
So that's the fans, the extraction fans.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay.
But in the production car, it'll start much faster because you'll use the...
Yeah, because... Well, not only that. Here you have a big weight in the dyno. On the Jesko and the Jamira, there is no flywheel. So it, boom, does this.
Oh, yeah, there's no flywheel?
Yeah. And all the kind of funny sounds is these kind of pipes and exhaust here rattling a bit, so...
So we're going to let it warm up.
Yeah.
Then we're going to come back and we're going to plot a dyno graph to see how much power it's producing on normal 95 pump fuel.
While we waited for that, I wanted to check out the workshops next door, which is where new prototype components are developed. And it's also where Christian's team is literally reinventing the wheel.
So here we're coming into our carbon fiber department.
This is where you test, you build up new parts. So what are they doing here, for instance?
A hollow carbon fiber wheel.
And this is part of a development, is it, rather than production?
Yeah, let's ask. For which model is this?
Which car?
Yes.
Am I allowed to say?
It's a new one. Okay, yeah, no, you can. Exactly.
It turns out this new wheel design was for the Koenigsegg Seder Spear. I got to check out this lighter, more powerful version of the Jesko Attack for myself a few months later at the official reveal. But when I was visiting the factory, the whole project was completely top secret.
Yeah, luckily it's not easy to see what okay. It looks like. It's a new wheel.
But this is interesting. If we're allowed to show, we can blur it out if we need to. How you have your buck that you're working round, and then you're laying the carbon fiber layers on to produce the wheel. Then you'll take this metal bit out, obviously.
Yes.
How long does it take to make one of these?
Probably 3 or 4 days.
So you're working on this for 3 or 4 days?
Yeah.
And you're basically using the carbon fiber sheets, which
they're pre-cut and marked here, you can see. So you have a certain order to put them in.
And how often do you have to go back and like, oh, I laid that one a bit wrong?
Pretty often.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, it's such a low tolerance. So it's like everything needs to be perfect.
So all these pieces here are for that individual wheel?
Correct. And the pieces already put on there, of course.
So how many pieces in total make up a wheel?
650 individual carbon fiber pieces going into one wheel over around 3 days from one operator. So then you can count how many people we need to be to build our wheels.
Yes. And you can see that this one piece is part of the spoke. So there's a few pieces for the spokes there. Look at that, and you can see the design of it there. And this is for a secret car that's not yet been revealed.
We have a patent for this. We call it Air Core. So you can see this is a cutout of a Riviera wheel.
It's not the same design, but that's basically how it's made.
Same principle, exactly. So you see it's hollow inside here. Here you actually have the wheel nut.
Yeah.
So we clamp the wheel nut straight into the hollow carbon fiber, which was deemed to sort of be impossible before we did it.
And in terms of like longevity of these wheels compared to like a magnesium wheel, you know, you hit a pothole or something like, how do they cope with that?
Metals kind of fatigue from every kind of input, whether you're getting close to the stress limit or not, while composite doesn't. So that's one thing. Secondly, through pre-testing and real-life testing, what we have noticed is that when you hit a pothole severe enough to dent your aluminium wheel to the point where all the air leaks out, nothing happens to this. So therefore, inherently safer.
But high strength and looking cool aren't the only reasons why Christian developed these wheels. The biggest advantage they have over conventional alloy wheels is weight.
We're talking about 4 kilos lighter per wheel, 16 kilos lighter car, but then it's unsprung. So that means that when you hit the bump, you go back to contact the ground quicker. So you can also have softer suspension as a result. But then you have the gyroscopics effect as well for steering. I mean, these are gyro spinning that counteracts steering feel. So less mass means better steering feel. On top of that, when you're accelerating, you have to spin up all this mass. It's a flywheel. And then when you push the brakes, you need to break down the energy in the flywheel. So you get, apart from the car being lighter, you get faster acceleration and shorter braking distance and better steering feel and more contact to the ground due to the less mass.
So when people are like buying a sports car, they might think, oh, I don't need magnesium wheel, I don't need carbon ceramic brakes, so I'm not taking it on track. I don't. Actually, the benefit will really benefit the how the car feels to drive just
yes,
in normal situations.
Yes. I mean, it should be set up for it, of course. The positive impact of performance and sensory input is massive. So if you care about that, it's a high value.
All these carbon fiber components have to be cured in massive heated chambers called autoclaves. These heat up the parts under high pressure, which makes them stronger, lighter, and gives them a better surface finish than a normal industrial oven. But this is where my tour of Christian's high-tech factory took a slightly unexpected turn.
So, autoclaves. This one is kind of funny, you know. Autoclaves are in the car industry seen as like the holy grail of manufacturing and the pinnacle and aerospace and so on. This is a re-threading tractor tire autoclave from the 60s that we rebuilt. I found in a scrapyard.
You found it in a scrapyard?
Yeah.
Wow.
To buy a new autoclave of this size, we have 3 of them in Spain. They're around like 400,000 euro. I think with the rebuild and the scrap everything, this was around 150,000 euro when we had no money back in the day. And it just worked fine. But if you look here, let's see, 1974.
Yes, look at this plaque. So it wasn't for carbon fiber, obviously,
no,
it was for melting rubber.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like this super high tech. In reality, it's also very similar to something very rudimentary.
I've already seen how Christian likes to engineer and build his own parts, often regardless of cost. But there are exceptions to this rule, because an old tractor tire autoclave isn't the only piece of equipment he's repurposed over the years.
I can't show you the insides, but I can show you the outsides of this. So this is our new US Viper system. So
US?
Yeah, with the CC850. we have a little bit lower glass than on previous car comparisons with. And there are regulations for the sweeping area of the windshield wiper. And we actually, for many, many years, there was one standard component we kept on using because it was so good. And that was the Mercedes style, kind of old school style reaching out windshield wiper. And a lot of people recognize, oh, that's from Mercedes. Yeah, it is. It's a fantastic one, high speed, Autobahn approved, works really well. But eventually, that didn't do the trick to reach out the full area that we needed for our modern cars. So here we have developed a completely new one in-house with some very special gearing in here that I can't show because we're doing some patents on that, which makes this become shorter and longer than any other wiper in the world.
Right, yes, it reaches out to do the corners, but by hand.
You can see how far it reaches out. There. You see, that's crazy, this stretch from here to here. A thing you don't think about, but it's a pretty big undertaking to make it happen, to have this biggest ratio from short to long and make it swipe and be lightweight.
But then we got word that the Jimera development engine was finally ready for its dyno run.
We're hot now.
We're hot, good. Okay. Can we have the door a little bit open, even though we shouldn't?
Yeah, we can. At least one door.
It's just more fun with a little bit of noise. Okay. And this engine is not, let's say, put there to show maximum power at the moment. It's tuning kind of emissions and drivability parameters and so on. But you will see what it will do today, which will not be its highest number possible. But interesting to keep in mind, 95 octane fuel.
Right.
Even on this fuel, we can go higher like we do on the Esco.
Okay. Are you ready?
Let's do a pull then.
See the dry sump tank there on the side, so we have a window, so we see what's going on. That's the same tank as in the car, in the Jimera.
Here we go.
That was a pull. I think it was over 1,000 horsepower.
You can check. This was about 1,050 horsepower.
And that's on 95. So when you're running it fully, what do you anticipate it will do on 95?
So I mean, the Jesko, we are up at 1,270. So this has slightly smaller turbos, so which means the boost be a little bit earlier. Uh-huh. So I would say over 1,200 at least.
That's the target, yes. Yeah. The orange one is our torque curve.
So you're getting to peak torque about there.
1.5 RPM, we hit 1,100 newton meters.
And which is your power curve, this?
So then the green one is the power curve.
Okay.
So here we hit 1,050 horsepower at 7.5. So we have a little bit more headroom, which we are still under development.
Right, so you're going to get this power curve, the green, going a bit more like that.
Right, yes, correct.
Okay, you're still developing the engine now before they go to the customer.
You're correct. I mean, we keep on doing this even to Jesko engines and other engines to run them over time, to put even more mileage on in for service.
To see what happens.
To see what happens. So this is kind of endless work.
And this development doesn't just apply to Koenigsegg's V8 engines. Christian applies the same rigor to testing the electrical components in the brand new Jimera. However, these require a completely different type of dyno.
So this is a Jimera four-wheel drive drivetrain in our chassis dyno. Huh. So we can test and develop the whole drivetrain without having the car in the way. We can go in and have a little look. It's pretty
cool. You test, like, once the cars all put together or beforehand, the customer cars and their power outputs and their performance on these systems?
Yes, we run each customer engine on the production dyno. Then we test each car on the airfield up to 300 kilometers per hour with full braking. Like our competitors, they do the same, but we jokingly say we only deliver used cars.
Yes. So that's a question for you. When you buy a new car, there's this running period, which is, there's one good thing about EVs, there's no real running period. You get
right.
It. You can just enjoy it. If you've done like 300 kilometers an hour and you've tested it on the dyno, do you need to run the car in, or is it running?
If you really want to, you can, yes, go for it, but recommend easing into it a bit for many reasons.
Yeah, I would imagine that quite a lot of your customers are quite impatient.
Right, sure.
I'm
sure you met
them. We don't like waiting.
Exactly. So here you can actually see our e-motor, the black thing there.
Yep.
And that's it's a six-phase motor, and it has a Raxial flux technology that we have patented, which is a combination of axial and radial.
Essentially, this motor has a core that's driven by magnetic fields arranged in two different orientations, instead of just one, like a conventional motor. This is complex to design and difficult to build, but it has one big advantage.
The end result is that when we compare this motor to what we know is out there, we have the highest torque slash power density for weight and size.
So it allows you to have a lot of power in a
smaller
package.
Lighter package.
Because that is small.
Yes.
And how much horsepower is that delivering?
That's 800 horsepower and 1250 newton meters of torque.
In that little disc?
In that little black disc there.
And what's the weight of that?
That's 39 kilos.
So this tiny motor produces more power and over 500 newton meters more torque than you get in a Lamborghini Aventador SVJ's naturally aspirated V12. But it weighs 85% less than that big 6.5 litre engine. And Christian has big plans to make these motors even better. But before we get into that, there's something else groundbreaking about the Gemera's drivetrain that's on show here. Rather than active differentials, it uses separate hydraulic clutches to split the power between all four wheels. And this allows it to do something very special.
So this is the first time in the world on any drivetrain where you can run a four-wheel drive car with four-wheel torque vectoring in EV mode from one e-motor. And you can do the same.
Right.
You can run four-wheel drive, four-wheel torque vectoring without using the e-motor from only the combustion engine with nine gears.
Got
or you can use them together doing all of that. It's a reduction of parts compared to anything else we've seen.
So it's sort of giving you the benefit of having individual hub-mounted motors.
Exactly. But with one
e-motor. With one motor, or the combustion engine if you don't want the motor.
Exactly.
You don't have an accountant going, don't do that, do you?
No.
I can tell.
But he would be happy because we saved three e-motors.
That's true.
But this is just the first generation of what Christian calls the dark matter motor. The next generation is already being developed behind this particularly scary looking door.
Heavy magnetic field.
No.
Electric shock,
right.
So no pacemaker. There's some secret sources in here, okay. So we might have to edit the video.
That's fine.
But just give a little glimpse.
Okay, yes, let's do it.
Of what's going on here. It's a lab where we create prototypes. Six-phase inverter, here are parts for that. These are kind of internals of the motor. It's kind of a thing of beauty as well. So I find this equally interesting as combustion engines or transmissions. It's so much still to do in this field. When you get into it, you see, hang on a second, we can use our carbon fiber knowledge to do things no one seems to do, where you can shrink and make more compact and more powerful and more efficient.
Is this forged?
This is machined.
So it's all machined out of a billet.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason, I mean, if we would continue with aluminium, we would cast it. But we're going for carbon forging instead to make the world's first full carbon fiber motor.
And the benefits of that are weight?
Yes, weight.
But is it also a little bit because we can?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
However, this can-do attitude comes with its own problems. It's clear that Koenigsegg is capable of making a fully electric car. But should it? Bugatti delayed this decision under the leadership of Matteo Rimac. And Horatio Pagani told me there simply isn't the demand for an electric Pagani either. So I had to put this question to Christian.
When do you think you're going to build an electric hypercar? Will it be when you absolutely have to because there's no other choice?
I thought we probably would have done it by now. And that's why we started a quite big department for electrical propulsion development. But then we realized that the customer really enjoys the combustion engine. And if we focus on renewable fuels and efficient packaging and lightweight, we can make a fantastic mixture where we actually benefit from the hybrid drive for the excitement and enjoyment, like in the Gemera here, and make worth of the investment and prepare us for the future when we maybe really need to do only EVs. But who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, we'll just have fun with it. So that's kind of where we're at with it. It's a bit of a hedge.
Yeah.
And making sure the car benefits from it in the meantime.
I was beginning to understand why the Gemera costs around $2.7 million, or over £2 million. But there's another reason that I only started to grasp when Christian showed me the facility that actually builds Koenigsegg's incredible motors.
So this is our e-motor production line. This facility doesn't run non-stop because if we did two shifts here, we could do 5,000 motors per year. And we don't have that need at the moment, but we have a lot of interest from outside parties when they're looking for maximum power and torque density to size and don't care about price, then they can come to us.
Also, this kind of comes back to like the price of the cars. Part of what you're paying is this to be standing still.
As well, of course.
Yeah, you are, because if you want it in the car, you need this unit.
Yeah.
And output volumes are low, so at times you're paying for a machine. In a normal production facility, that is working
All the time. Of course. Yeah, that's true. And this is, let's see if I can open this up. Again, no pacemaker here. This is a...
rotor magnetizing.
Yeah, I don't know how to open this actually. I shouldn't touch it. It's a hollow carbon fiber.
So this is the rotor.
We used our wheel technology to make this hollow.
Okay, yeah.
So it's
and where's
light.
The magnets?
These are the magnets.
These are the magnets. And this bit spins.
Yes.
Hence the name rotor.
Yes.
Obviously. Okay.
And this is after this is manufactured, it's magnetized here.
Okay.
Cutting edge dark matter motors aren't the only things built in this new facility. Koenigsegg is still making new parts for some of its oldest cars as part of the Legends division, which is also where Christian keeps some of his most important models in the brand's history.
That's a Gera drivetrain. Here you actually have the engine part of the chassis. So this is bolted to the monocoque, and that's the actual dry sump frame of the engine.
So this was someone's car?
This is kind of a spare part, the rear end.
Right.
Basically.
Might it be needed?
Who knows?
But you built it.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you end up building this extra one? Was it a plan? Or was it?
No, it kind of came about out of having parts, having time, making use of it, making a spare part kit kind of thing, something like that.
But it may never get used.
Could be. This is the first ever Regera. It is actually light blue. You might have seen it. It was on the Geneva Motor Show in 2014. It just got wrapped matte black for this year's Koenigsegg Tour because it is a film car and we don't want it to reflect too much in what we're photographing.
So you use this as like the, what we call the tracking car.
Yes.
Obviously you need to film a Koenigsegg, you need a Koenigsegg.
To keep up.
Yeah. And so you have it all in matte black so
yeah,
it doesn't reflect.
So it reflect. Doesn't reflect so,
so
much.
So this is... quite a good tracking car. Here's an example of some of our tracking cars.
It's quite nice interior for a tracking car.
Yeah, it's all right, isn't it?
We built this in 2014, so it's 10 years old now. 2 years ago, it set a new world record, 8 years after its creation, with the record of this one, since it's the same model.
Well, Christian, thank you very much for showing us around. I mean,
my
really
pleasure.
Impressive, really enlightening, and giving us this exclusive access. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating, and to hear the story of how back in 1994, this dream, and here we are now.
Unbelievable for me even, I guess, when I think about it.
And looking forward to seeing like the future cars and what happens next.
We're very excited for that as well.